Hey there, Freedom Fighters. My name is Andrew Warner. I'm the founder of Mixergy, where I interview entrepreneurs about how they built their businesses for an audience of hungry, ambitious entrepreneurs. Yeah, there's some people who just are okay where they are. God knows they must have done good therapy. They're happy where they are. They don't need more. Why should they even bother with the anxiety of listening to Mixergy? But for the rest of us, for the few people, I should say, who are in a world where they just keep wanting more. They just keep wanting to build something bigger. They want to keep going. Well, then what you're hungry for is to hear what's working for other people, to get ideas that will help inspire you to come up with something brand new for yourself. And that's what Mixergy is all about. Joining me is an entrepreneur who, when he had a job working at a company called Udemy, he heard the founder of Udemy on here doing a Mixergy interview. And he said something to himself, and then he worked. And here he is today building, actually continuing to build a company, but he created a company and he sold it. The entrepreneur is Max Altshuler. He is the founder of Sales Hacker. Get this. I'm so fascinated by this. I can't wait to have Max, when you told me you might not be on, I was going to go into freaking Seattle just to get you on here because I'm fascinated by your story. Here's Max's story. The guy starts out with meetups, actually produces money with meetups. Who makes money freaking meetups? This dude does. Then he gets into conferences. Again, who makes money in conferences when they got no audience? But he figures out how to get an audience. He figures out how to get a partnership, which I thought he wasn't making any money from. I knew about the partnership a little bit. I assumed he was doing it just like for reputation. No, he was making money from it. So he's got these conferences around sales. He's making money. He's doing well. Got every reason to be proud. And then that's me punching my arm. He gets knocked by the fact that the software vendors are creating their own freaking conferences and they don't care about like making money from it. So they could splurge. And any other person would just have a cute story. I had this big business. It did well. I went out of business. Here's how it happened. And we'd learn a lot and we'd admire him for doing it. But Max's story didn't end up that way. Max said, I got to find a way. And I think because he had a good mentor, a good guide in this story that you'll hear about, he found the way. He found a way to take what was working for him offline, bring it online, do it with strength. And I want to find out how he did it. How is he doing online education? How is he doing online conferences? How is he doing online content in a way that's profitable? All those things feel like they're done, but they're not for him. All right, so that's Max's story. He's going to tell it here in much more detail. We're going to figure out how he did it, and more importantly, how you, the person who's listening to me, can get at least one idea that will fire you up, and a few years from now, you just like Max will say, I heard that interview, and I had to be here, and then you'll be here. And we're going to do it thanks to two phenomenal sponsors. The first will host your website, right? It's called HostGator, and the second, Max and I both know really well. It's a company that will help you hire developers. It's called TopTal. Max, what did you say to yourself when you heard Gagan Biani on Mixergy at the time?
That was like 7 years ago, one of the first episodes, and I was like, oh, I'll be on there one day. I'll make
you
it.
Did.
You had some good ones on there too at the time, like some really good entrepreneurs, and I'm sure you still do, but and I remember it was the early days, and I was like, wow, it's pretty high quality here.
I know. We were getting started. And the reason I had high quality, same reason now, is because the people who are on or people who are listening, you were an early employee of Udemy, the site where anyone can host a course and people can go and buy courses. And you noticed that there was a side of that business that no one was paying attention to. What was the side?
But yeah, so I built the supply side of that marketplace. So the online education marketplace, supply side, demand side. So demand side was, you know, our marketing, our students. Supply side was the sales side. That was our instructors who taught courses. So we had everything from like, you know, what would be, you know, in SaaS and SMB, which was your individual, you know, instructor who could teach one course, all the way up to your enterprise, which was a publisher who, you know, if you signed a deal with Wiley, they'd put their whole catalog on Udemy. So I almost said outreach there. Now it's a different world, but on Udemy. So at the time, we were really starting from scratch, didn't have much of a process in place, and got really hacky with it. Built out a team of virtual assistants in the Philippines, used a company called TaskUs, which has also blown up since then. And we used a company called TaudApp, which happens to be a company that got acquired by Marketo, and now I'm currently employed at a competing product. But built this really hacky sales process and really went off to the races. You know, it was... We were growing super fast. And
here's what I remember. Yeah. We do courses on Mixergy. I get proven entrepreneurs. We train them to teach. We organize their ideas. We publish their courses on Mixergy. And I started to see at some point, they were contacting me and saying, Andrew, ever since I've been on Mixergy, now I'm getting contacted from Udemy to go put my courses on there. I contacted Gagan and I said, Gagan, can you back off of these guys? My sense was, from what he told me, this was a team of virtual assistants who are scouring the internet. Mm-hmm. Not even virtual assistants, but virtual employees. They were virtual people.
Yeah.
They weren't employees even. Scouting the internet, looking for courses, and then finding contact information and then sending out messages. This is what you created?
Yeah. So what we did was we would use let's say our category or that we wanted to create was technology. So we'd go on Amazon and look at the best technology books, like bestsellers. Okay. And then we'd rank it. Okay, we need PHP, Ruby on Rails, Python, Node. These are the most popular ones. You'd rank it all the way down.
How much of it was there before you got there?
Not much. None of this.
Not much. This process wasn't there. But you said, look, I need to have development. I need to have coding courses on here. Where am I going to find coding courses? Amazon, of course. Anyone who's written a book has been screened enough through someone's process. You go through and you find the top people. And then what did you do?
Yeah. So from there, we used a keyword search tool. I actually have the link somewhere. I got to find it. But what you do is you would put in box one, video, courses, lessons. In box two, it would be the actual subject matter. So Python or Ruby or whatever it was. And then the last box would be beginners, intermediate, advanced, et cetera. And so what you do is you press, convert or go, and it would type out all these different strings of the three boxes, in a row. So beginners Python courses, beginners Python lessons. And we would put that together and have the virtual assistant in the Philippines, whose English wasn't that great, go out, type in all the search content search catalogs. So Google, Bing, SlideShare, Slide6, YouTube, Vimeo, all these different keyword strings. And what came out of that, they would fill out these spreadsheets with all the people who came up for courses.
Okay.
So now we build out these directories of all the people who taught courses in these different program languages, also the bestsellers from books. And that was like our low-hanging fruit. So if you already had a course in Python, well, we just want you to put it on Udemy. If you had a book on it but not a course yet, well, we want you to create a course and then put it on Udemy.
And you had different email that you would go for each one. And the reason that you were talking about Tout app is that, also created by a Mixergy fan, that software would tell you when someone opened up your email, so you know that they read it, when they clicked over, so you know when to follow up. Software has gotten really sophisticated when it comes to this type of thing, but you were using that at the time. This is what helped you get courses. Now, once you get a course, how at Udemy, how natural was the flow of new students from that? Without marketing it,
33% of all of our new students at that time came from instructors.
Meaning the instructor would promote it, or it would. So once an instructor put their course up, even if the course was already somewhere else, and you said just bring it over here, that would lead to new customers.
In most cases, it was so much more polished on the Udemy platform that they'd rather promote it on Udemy than on their own like WordPress or whatever they had it up on.
Okay,
I remember there's this one guy, Victor Bastos. In Portugal, we found him on YouTube. He had like he had scattered videos from like seven different programming languages, and he can do them in English, Spanish, and Portuguese. So I hit him up. We had a good conversation. He got his stuff up on Udemy, and then we started doing these Amazon daily deals, like the Groupon style deals, and we got him in a couple of those. I'm pretty sure he went from making like $500 a month in YouTube ads to probably made like $500K that year. Teaching on Udemy, because we kept putting him in these daily deals because he was like one of the best instructors we had. We can sell it in English, Spanish, Portuguese, and he had like seven different program languages. So he that guy owes me a boat or a car or something like that.
You bring him in, and because of that, you get more customers. More customers means more revenue. You don't have to pay any money for that except a share of the sale. So this is brilliant for you. Now, you did the thing that I love San Francisco, that I love about being in San Francisco. You said, look, there are other people like me here. I'm not the only person who's thinking in this kind of systemized way. And you got together with people like the founders of Thumbtack. I went to their house once. I remember sitting on like this folding table at their house. Beautiful view, folding table that could have been out of someone's high school basement. Great dinner that was created by someone on Thumbtack. Thumbtack is a site where you can go and find people who'll do things like mow the lawn or cook for you. And these freaking guys, I can't even reveal what they said. I swear I'm going to take this to the grave, but it was like shocking the kind of stuff that they were doing to grow. Some of it is open, like using virtual assistant like you. Some of it is like, holy crap, you guys are such nice, like sweet little sweethearts. And this is what you're doing?
Yeah. I remember hanging out with Marco and Jonathan in the real early days going to they had like it used to be like, it looked like their office was like a garage at some point. I forgot where it was on like 5th and maybe like 5th and Folsom or something like that. But it was like a little garage. And then they raised that big round of funding. But prior to that, you know, we would go in there and geek out on how both the companies were using these virtual assistants in the Philippines, you know, $4 an hour or $800 a month or whatever it was. They were doing it mostly for customer support. We were doing it mostly for sales. So we were swapping a lot of knowledge on this.
But they were doing sales too, or maybe when they were talking to me.
After this, yeah, exactly.
After that. So then they see what you're doing and you're saying, okay, great. We could do it as sales. They also did really well with SEO and this stuff. You guys were starting to trade ideas and you said, all right, there's a lot of good stuff in here. I'm being known as a person who's doing this. That is what led you to do the first meetup, right?
Yeah. And, you know, I think in that, and similar to the Thumbtack case, it was, hey, Goggin, you know, my founders, what are you guys doing in, you know, to grow so quickly? And they'd be like, talk to Max. So then I kept building my network around that. There was another guy, Ryan Buckley, who's who had put out a bunch of articles on using Python scripts to scrape Crunchbase. And I was like, all right, that's genius. So we got a group of four of us together for the first Sales Hacker meetup. It was TK, who was the founder of TadApp, you know, at the time. Now he's GBP over Marketo, or Adobe now, actually. So double acquisition there. And another guy, Xander Ford, who was the head of sales at BlueKai at the time. And we would meet weekly. It was monthly, sorry. And we would say, all right, just, you know, if we're going to open this up, only bring people who add value. And I think that's the key to starting a community really on, is like making sure it's a really high quality foundation and it's somewhat exclusive. And sure enough, every month we bring somebody who added value. Xander was an investor at something called The Factory, which was a building that we can go, you know, meet at and use the facilities every time. So we had like a really nice meeting room for it. Every time there was a monitor on the wall and somebody would present, you know, what they were doing. A bunch of different sales tech companies were basically founded out of it. People who would present to us really early on.
Were you charging for it from the beginning?
No. So this was
just like a mastermind. And yeah. What you wanted was someone to come in and talk. So before we started, we were chatting, you and I, while we were waiting for this room that you're in right now. People can't tell because it looks like you're behind us, like you're sitting in front of a concrete wall or something, but you're in a really good recording studio. We were waiting for the recording studio to open up and we were chatting. You were like freaking blowing my mind with basic stuff that you were showing. And it wasn't the stuff that you were showing so much as the way you were thinking and expressing it. They go, this is great. I said, we're going to talk about that in the interview. You said, actually, I can't say that part. I can't say that other part. And the interesting thing is you're saying to me that you were able to get these people to speak and say the good stuff on like not a stage, but in front of a group of people.
Yeah. I mean, the biggest the group got was, you know, it'd be between 12 and 20 people, but we brought in, I remember, there was a new CEO at, Kiss Metrics at the time. And he came in and we like picked apart his business and his sales process. And he left there and he was blown away. And he was like a 20-year industry veteran who was just like, holy shit, I can't believe how these people are thinking about these problems these days. And since then, so much sales technology has been invented. Like the company I'm at right now that acquired my business is $500 million, last valuation was $500,000. And they didn't exist at this time. Like this was 5 years ago.
Really?
Didn't exist.
I thought that they've been around forever. But you know what? We're talking about Outreach, outreach.io. To be honest, I didn't do much research on them.
Yeah. 4 years old.
What'd they pay to acquire you guys?
Can't get into that.
Give me a ballpark. Are we talking about like over or under five?
Over.
Over $5 million. Yeah. You became a millionaire. Like you have an account that you can go look at and see over $1 million?
Yeah, but that was, I could do that before the.
Well, you could do that even before.
Yeah.
How old were you, do you think, when you were able to look at a bank account and see that you had over $1 million in it?
2015 or 16. So 3 years ago, I think it was 2015.
Okay.
Yeah.
Ballpark. So then how old were you in 2015?
28. I don't know why it takes me so
28.
Long.
Yeah, 28. It does for me too. I wish that I was born on a zero numbered year, like in an even number, so it's easier for me to tell. But yeah. So by the way, Sales Hacker was founded 2013. So we're talking about a couple of years afterwards. That's how I had no freaking idea. I just thought you were doing this for passion because it's good stuff. And it was. All right. So at this point in the story, you are still at Udemy. You're creating these groups. You're hanging out. You're learning from people and really just becoming a guy with a big reputation. You go to a company called Attorney Fee. What is Attorney Fee?
It's a local legal marketplace. So if you were, you know, in a city and you wanted to claim bankruptcy, had a DUI, got divorced, personal injury. You can call this number, put in your zip code, press 1 for bankruptcy, 2 for personal injury, 3 for divorce, 4 for, you know, whatever else. And it would connect you to an attorney in your area. And if you were on the call for longer than 30 seconds, we would get a fee from the attorney. So it was like a, you know, lead gen.
What was the website? I can't find it anywhere.
I think it's local.legalzoom.com right now. So
Got it. Okay. Yeah. So LegalZoom acquired them.
So I went there cause I saw a potential good payday. They gave me a good amount of equity and a great salary, you know, especially for the time and you know, the ability to manage kind of both sides of the marketplace there, grow my skill set, but they were working out of LegalZoom's offices in Mountain View. And so I was like, okay, this is going to be a layup. LegalZoom's going to buy these guys. LegalZoom acquired them in like 6 months after I started working there. And they were like, you know, we want you to switch to marketing and move to Austin. And I basically said, there's not enough zeros on that check to make me do either of those two things. So
at that point, you like Austin?
I like Austin now. At the time, I didn't know anybody there.
Okay.
Now,
you know, all right. What was interesting to you about attorney fee was you could kind of apply some of the stuff that worked for you
all of it.
And so did you get to apply anything there?
Yeah. Yeah, we had
What's one thing that you did that you're especially proud of that was
impactful? Well, I quadrupled revenue and cut spend in half. So
You cut spend by cutting back advertising?
From making our process more efficient. So that's what it is.
Give me an example. What do you mean by process more efficient?
So all the hacky stuff that we do is about making processes more efficient so that you need to spend less money to generate more revenue or less resources to generate more revenue.
Can you be more specific? I know that there's some things that you might not want to talk about, but it's been a while. No one's coming back for you now. But even within the confines that you were limited to back then, you've got something you can say.
You can have an 8-person sales team, but if they're inefficient, then you're paying 8 people.
No, more specific to like what you guys did.
But that's what we were doing. So we'd had an 8-person sales team that wasn't generating their number.
And then what did the sales team have to do?
They had to go out and sign up lawyers.
Lawyers, because the more lawyers they get, the more people are there to pay a commission whenever you guys send people to them. Okay, so they were inefficient. How did you make them more efficient?
So if you plugged in processes like virtual assistants and TaoDap, you didn't need 8 people anymore to do the jobs to generate the revenue that they were generating. You could do the same thing with 2 or 3, especially 2 or 3 really good
ones. Because we're talking about, what is it?
Efficiency.
The sales development rep, the SDR, that was what the salespeople were doing. Is that right? So when you have a virtual assistant do it, what is a virtual assistant's process for getting potential leads to the salesperson so the salesperson can be efficient and just focus on closing?
Yeah, so this is what they were doing. So they were going to Google, typing in California lawyers, click in, get the email address, type an email.
Your salespeople were doing that.
Yeah, before I showed up. Yep.
Okay. And by the way, this is like basic stuff right now.
But
there are people who knew it. They just didn't know about this. They weren't into.
So we were scraping Yelp, scraping lists, uploading it into TaoDap. We were typing canned templates. I could send thousands of emails a day if I really wanted to. And then do follow-ups and then do like, okay, when this person opens it, they get a phone call. So like instead you have good reps calling every time an email gets opened instead of sitting there going down Google one by one.
Wow. Okay. All right. How about one more? This is the kind of thing I'm looking for. Really specific. Tell you what, hold it for a second. Let's talk about my first sponsor. It's a company called HostGator, host websites. Let me ask you this. As a guy who's really smart, you've seen a lot of businesses online. If somebody's listening to me and goes, man, I'm where Max was when I was just after he decided he didn't want to work for LegalZoom. I got to figure out my own thing. All I have in this world is the clothes on my back. And Andrew gave me a HostGator hosting package, which means I could host WordPress, other platforms too. But let's face it, they're going to start with a WordPress website. What website, what business would you suggest they start in order to get themselves on track for success? Go ahead.
Yeah. I'm at this point with all the virtual assistant stuff, become experienced with, I'd say, arbitrage. Anything arbitrage is.
What do you mean by arbitrage? What would they arbitrage? Arbitrage is buy something low in one market and sell it higher to a market that doesn't know about the price. Yeah.
So I have a really good content writing process right now that we do, and you know, with Sales Hacker and Outreach with a team of writers in the Philippines. So an easy thing for me to be able to stand up would just say, all right, I'll go to companies and be a marketing content team and outsource the writing to. So just be like a project manager.
That's part of what we talked about before we started.
Yeah, exactly.
You started telling me, Andrew, we actually rank really highly for this keyword. I did my screen share, and then I did the search with you looking to see. And sure enough, you were there. And then you told me about your process where you've got a team of people who write it. And it's basically a process at this point. You keep improving and refining it, but it's a process. So you've got that process. Someone like me doesn't have that. We just need some content. It costs you, I'm just going to make up a number, about $200. I don't know that you want to say the real number. You didn't give me permission, so I won't. But let's say about $200. Yes. To me, it's worth $1,000, $2,000, right? And so you're saying, you offer this as a service. I come to your website. I see the work that you guys have done. Maybe you have a couple of case studies that you do for free. Andrew sees it and goes, screw it. $2,000 was worth it for us. We'll pay max $2,000. I'm paying you. You make $1,800. This is what builds your business. And that's the arbitrage that you're talking about. Yeah. And it's services arbitrage that you would look for.
Yeah. I mean, if I could start a business right now, any other business, knowing what I know, that's like a good, easy one where I can.
What's
like,
another one?
The main one, I think the biggest one that has like a massive opportunity over the next 2-3 years is system integration partners for companies like Outreach, Drift, and Intercom. So sales engagement platforms and chat platforms. If you can be the Accenture for that, I think you have there'll be a lot of money in that.
You're saying that there are all these different sales and customer support software that are out there that we're using, but they don't talk to each other.
Somebody can build a really big business on just setting it up in your tech stack and making sure your data is flowing. And then
that's it. Coming into the company saying, you got this software, we're going to make sure that it's connected. We're going to go away and then be there on call whenever you need us to do it.
Yep, exactly.
Companies will pay for that.
Oh yeah.
What's the software that they need to work together?
Look at like Capgemini, and then there's Accenture or Deloitte, all these.
But I always thought that those are for bigger companies that they can't figure out their head from their tail, and so they're willing to pay for it. But you're saying even at your level, even Outreach's level, they're willing to pay for this. Give an example of a problem that you guys have at Outreach that this would.
So if we're selling Outreach right now to a company that has,
what does Outreach do?
Outreach is a sales engagement platform. So we allow you to take your data from, actually, you don't even need Salesforce, but take your data from a CRM if you have one and email, call, do one-to-one personalized video from it, actually do LinkedIn with it, like LinkedIn messaging, connecting, SMS. So it's your one-stop shop for all things sales engagement. So engaging with your customer, your prospect, your buyer.
So I've got my contacts in my CRM, my address book. You guys help me contact them and help me figure out what's going on with them and personalize it. So what's a problem that you guys have, or what if I included it in my company at Mixergy, what's an issue that I would have that an integrator would help with?
So you can probably do your own thing, but if you're a, let's say you have a 20-person sales team, you buy Outreach. Now you have to set up email templates for your team that they want to use. Now you can set up your own email templates, or you can pay a company that knows every best practice in the book that does this for their livelihood to come in and set up the best templates they possibly can.
Okay.
Especially for your business. So now you're set up, you have your templates. Second thing is you need to make sure your data is flowing properly. You might have bad data. So like your Salesforce might need to be reorganized to make sure your data is really good so that it moves into Outreach properly.
Okay. And then let's talk about another piece of software. What would that, how?
Yeah. So it might be, Drift or Intercom.
So I have a Drift or Intercom on my website to proactively chat and with people who are looking at it. What's the way that I might connect it to Outreach?
So you can have a integration between, this is coming right now, but an integration with Drift and Intercom where if somebody comes in, immediately they can get a notification and you can send them an email, connect with them on LinkedIn or...
because you know who they are.
Yeah, exactly.
Only if the software is talking to each other. That's what you're talking about.
Yeah, then there's Clearbit and Rich. The modern tech stack for sales and marketing, especially in sales right now, is evolving in such a way that there is a real business for system integrators who really understand not only how to integrate it all together, but like best practices around, okay, well, here's how you should be A/B testing emails.
This might be the best HostGator ad we've ever done. Guys, listen to me. If you want to take that idea and run with it, we're talking about a services business, right? It doesn't cost much. You don't have to do a lot of software. In fact, none. Throw up a website, understand what you're selling and start selling and iterating it. If you want to take that idea, go to hostgator.com/Mixergy. Well, frankly, your friend Andrew Warner is going to get credit for sending you over, which means that Hostgator is going to buy more ads. They've already bought every ad that I possibly could sell them for 2019, but I want them to know that they're getting results for their money, number one, and maybe we sell them on 2020. Such is a good salesperson. You sound like 5 years ahead at this point. By the way,
I would still arbitrage every part of that business except for the sales process. I'd be the face of it. I would sell. I would outsource the copywriting. I would outsource the integration.
Even the integration. So you're saying when you build up this business, you're not doing the integration. Other people need to do the integration. That's all you want to do.
Yeah. Most of what every employee does at any company can be scaled off their plate by automation or outsourcing for less than their hour.
I freaking love the way you think. And I would never know it. Because you and I are sitting here. I'll tell you why. Because you're just sitting there like casual. Andrew, we're just kind of hanging out. I almost feel like... All right, hostgator.com/Mixergy. You'll get the lowest price that they're offering anyone online. Take that idea. And frankly, if you hate your current hosting company, just switch to hostgator.com/Mixergy. When you do, they're going to take great care of you. They'll give you a low price. You'll love it. Let's continue with this ad, Mac, with this interview, Max. So you decide, screw that. I'm not working here. I'm leaving. You look around your world and you say, these events that I'm doing are pretty good. Do you see a business model in it? Or were you thinking this could lead to the business model that becomes a business? Which one was it?
I had no strategy whatsoever.
How does a guy like you have no strategy?
For this, I think it was like August 25th, I knew I wasn't going to work at LegalZoom. August 27th was our next meetup. So I walked in there and I just said to the group, I was like, hey, we got 20 people in here now. Seems like people want this. Like, who here would be interested if we organized a conference around it? So in the room, I had Jason Lemkin, who was the CEO of EchoSign, who was at Adobe at the time, and also the founder and writer only at the time of Saster.
Oh, he didn't have an investment firm at the time.
No, none of that.
He wasn't doing any investment. Oh, really? Okay.
Writing Quora posts for Saster. There was Doug Landis, who was the VP of Sales Productivity at Box. There was Armando Mann, who was the VP of Sales at RelateIQ right before they sold. There was Matt Cameron, who had just signed on to be the VP of Sales at Scripted, which had just raised a lot of money at the time. And he was the previous global VP of Sales at Yammer. And then we had TK from TowDap, who basically was like, I'll be the marquee sponsor. Here's 15 grand. Ryan Buckley from Scripted also put up some cash, as a sponsor. And so we had pretty amazing lineup right off the bat.
Why do they want to be sponsors?
Because they knew we'd be able to get other salespeople in the room. So like TK from TowDap, he said it's the best sponsorship money he ever spent.
Because how much was, but Tow was like a few bucks a pop, right?
Tout at that time, I know they were selling decent sized deals. They were selling 20, 30K deals.
Oh, they were?
Yeah.
I thought that was like the inexpensive software that people used.
It was like the only one. So it was them and Yesware at the time. So right. They would do big deals. I mean, the Sacramento Kings were using them. Sacramento Kings is a decent size.
No, definitely. But I thought they were just a few bucks a seat, as it's called.
No, they have good deals. Yeah.
Got it. So for him, he's thinking, screw it. I get one company from this. We more than make up for our money. Yeah. And then what was it that he was asking for to promote his company for 15?
Kind of stupidly, but like 15K, I was like, sure. We did the Sales Hacker Conference presented by TowDap, so like made them the marquee sponsor. It's like everybody, there were a lot of people who thought it was like a TowDap conference.
Got it.
I made a bunch of money on the event, but like TK is like, yeah, like that worked for us for a long time. So
Go ahead. You can tell the story. Continue. I got so much I want to ask you, but go ahead.
So I ended up getting a bunch more speakers and I said, all right, we'll do 100 people and we'll keep it like invite only. And then it just kind of blew up. So we ended up like 300 people and I sold a sponsorship to Inside View for 10,000 bucks. That was like our other second biggest sponsorship.
What's Inside View?
It's another sales technology company.
Okay.
Data. And at the time, I didn't even have an LLC yet. So they were like, who do we make the checkout to? And I was like, oh shit, I gotta get an LLC and go get a bank account. I can't have them make me like a personal check. So I went and I got an LLC, got a bank account.
LegalZoom.
LegalZoom, closed the sponsorship, exactly. And I made like 60K in profit. And I think it was like through 4 or 5 weeks.
I gotta break this down. This business, this interview is not about this one conference, but I gotta break it down. How are you getting 300 people when you're at that point known by a handful of really good people who would make great speakers, but you don't have a list, you don't have a big blog? How'd you get them?
They all promoted it. TowDap promoted it to their customer and their customer list, and it just like kind of picked up steam. People found out about it and they wanted to to get involved.
It wasn't part of your deal with Tout where they had to promote it. It was just like, hey, we're all figuring this out as friends. We'll help you out, Max.
This is the difference between 2000 and like late 2013 and now, is that there weren't a lot of sales conferences. Like SaaS companies didn't throw their own conferences the same way, and there weren't a lot of like big SaaS companies. It wasn't.
I'm going to ask you in a bit why all these freaking SaaS companies have to have conferences. I don't understand it. Like Zoo. I was at the farmer's market here. There was a guy who had a Zootopia or Zoo. What is it?
Zootopia, yeah.
Zootopia, that's what it's called.
Zoomtopia. Zoomtopia. We're on
Zoom. Yeah, because you and I are talking using Zoom. I go, I get it. I love Zoom. I'm on it all day long. Do I want to go to a conference for freaking Zoom? No. Yeah.
It's a bull market and it's category creation. And so companies are spending a lot more money on marketing. And I think that's it. But anyway, at this time, there weren't a lot of crazy like VC backed sales SaaS companies.
Mm-hmm.
So the only conferences that were out there were like two really more like old school ones, Sales 3.0 and AISP. So people were dying for like a new age, cutting edge, you know, sales
conference. A conference for people who understood these sales hacker tools.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. Or like more technical salesperson, people who wanted to leverage technology in the sales process. And that was like our original like first kind of like mission or mantra was like, yeah, we're for the people who are looking to embrace, you know, modern sales technology. And so I made some good money off that conference. And at that point was like, all right, bought me some runway to figure out what I wanted to do next. Didn't know what that was going to be, but I knew that if I kept doing this, I could build my network. And I was meeting some really awesome people. Like I remember Aaron Ross wrote Predictable Revenue, and like he was an author. He was like, you know, early at Salesforce. Like he spoke at the first conference, and I was like, wow, I can get Aaron Ross to speak at my conference. I didn't know anybody at the time. I got Brian Green from Emergence to speak at the conference. So like now I'm starting to know VCs. Jason Lemkin was, this is pre-Storm, but like wow, he was a big deal. He just sold a company for, you know, $100 million or whatever that was, $80 million. So I was this like, you know, kind of no name kid who was at Udemy and then Attorney Fee. And I was like, all right, let's see where this goes. I just really genuinely geeked out on this stuff and like talking about it with people. So March came around. So this was like, you know, 4 or 5 months later. And I didn't know if I wanted to like start my own company, if I wanted to join as an early stage VP of sales somewhere, go build something of my own. Like, so I gave myself some time. March came around. I was like, I wonder if I could do this in New York. I wonder if there'd be an audience there. And same thing. I think it was another like 6 weeks, 50K profit. And at the same time, I launched the blog, saleshacker.com, where I can move my stuff over from, I think it was like Max Talks Hacks was my original site that I posted to my own content. And then I would crowdsource content from other people. I would publish the summaries from the presentations from the conferences, so something lived on afterwards. So that picked up after the New York conference. We started making money off meetups. Somebody came to us and said, hey, you should run like a meetup around this. We would sponsor. I remember I made 7K off my first meetup, profit 5K off my second one. I was like, damn, I should do this in every city every month.
And this is you at first. Let me pause. You organizing a meetup in a city, you get a handful of people to show up. They're all the right people. So a sponsor's willing to pay. The sponsor gets the opportunity to tell people about their software, which people like because they're here because they like it. And they have a couple of great speakers. You're starting to make 7K, 5K. You say, we should do this in every city. New York and San Francisco came first for the meetups. Yeah. Then you don't say, I'm going to hire a team of people who are going to put these events together in every city. You do what instead?
So I actually, I just like outsourced it basically. I found a local somebody in every geo and was basically like, here's how it's going to work. HQ, you know, is going to make the money and sell the sponsorships and you get the branding and recognition locally as like the person on the ground in that city. And, so we ended up in 32 cities for meetups.
And it's you selling sponsorships in 32 cities.
Yeah. I mean, we would do like global sponsorships, for a lot of them.
But then if you're in a local city, and the founder or the speaker is there in a local city, I could understand them saying, I'm going to sponsor this event. So I get an opportunity to speak and then people will talk to me afterwards and some will sign up. When they're in San Francisco, but the event is in Tallahassee, who's promoting the sponsor's software there?
Visibility and the host has to, you know, say thanks to our sponsors. And we sent out signage. So we would have like, you know, pop-up banner.
Okay. This is what you do. You are good at systems like this.
Yep.
The whole structure of here's my outline for how to do this. Here's how I control people remotely. When you're getting a lot of different people, dozens all at once, who have no reason to listen to you other than they respect you, what are some of the mistakes and flaws that happened?
Oh, well, we ran this for like a year, I think a year, year and a half or something like that. And then we realized the juice wasn't worth the squeeze. So at first, it was pretty profitable. Then things got more saturated. Everybody was doing meetups. Again, this is like the starting of like phasing out of these in-person events for profit. But what we realized is, you know, I'd have to pay taxes on every state that we did a meetup in. So like next thing you know, the money it cost for the accountant to do the taxes in that location, plus the tax bill you had to pay per city, just like kind of made it not worth it.
Wait, I'm shocked by that. If you would have used Eventbrite, would you have still had to pay taxes on it? Or is there a service on? You would have.
If you make money in an event in that state, you have to pay taxes in that state. Like if you're an NBA basketball player and you have to pay taxes and
in every state where you're making money and there's no online like ticketing system that pays that for you, that handles it. They can't. Wow.
You got to file it in every state.
Wowee. So how much did it cost you to do taxes at that point and get it in account?
Let's just say that. Yeah, exactly. So
Okay.
Not worth it. The second thing that became not worth it is we couldn't control the quality as much as we would have liked. So I remember we had a big conference in New York coming up and a potential sponsor went to our London event, a London meetup. And then the next week, we thought he was going to close to sponsor the New York event for like $25K. And he said, yeah, didn't like the quality of the meetup, not going to sponsor the conference. And I was like, damn, I shouldn't have thrown that meetup and we'd have $25K more for this conference right now. Like, that sucks.
He didn't want to sponsor the conference because the meetup sucked. Yeah. Oh, so now it's starting to rub off from the events to the big one. Okay.
Because we couldn't control the quality of the meetup. Now I lost a 25K sponsor.
What did you do when now it's your product to sell? It's not someone else's team at attorney fee or Udemy. It's your product to sell. What did you do that was clever for getting sponsors that other people wouldn't think of because they're not you?
Man. I could probably share this now.
Don't hold back. Be the person people love, not the one that go, he's such... Go ahead.
So one of our favorite hacks for selling sponsorships was we fill out people like sales tech companies are ICP. So there are, you know, the people we sell to are companies that sell to salespeople. So companies like Outreach. We would fill out their webinar forms and ebook forms and stuff like that. And then when the SDR reaches out to us to try and sell us, we say, hey, we're not your ICP, but we've got 80,000 people in our database that are, we've got 1,000 people coming to a conference that are, whatever it was, we should get you in front of them. You know, let me know if you want to put me in touch with your marketing person. And then we flip it on them.
Got it. So you're like applying as if you're a customer who found them at a conference and then you say, got it. And when you say we, you had other people sell for you too at this point?
No.
It was you?
I've always said we from the very beginning. I don't know what it is. I can never say I. It's we. We are Sales Hacker. It was always, I'm a sole founder. There was nobody who started it with me early on. I had employees over the amount of time, very valuable ones, like people who were, we wouldn't be here today without them. But from the very beginning, it was just me, but I could never say I always said we.
That's impressive. It's not a forced thing. It's just who you are. All right, I'm going to talk about my second sponsor, TopTal, and now we're going to introduce the guy, Jason Lemkin, this guy who showed up at your event, who I think is one of the most brilliant people. I've told you this before we started. I haven't had him on Mixergy, not because I'm afraid to ask him to come on or I think he'd hold off. I could see him absolutely being on here. I want to find a way to make it good because he's so good. All right, I'm looking for the right angle. Here's the deal. Second sponsor is a company called TopTal. Max, you know TopTal, right? What do you know about them?
Hiring top talent.
Right.
Devs?
You know what? They started out exclusively with devs and then they said, let's add some designers because our people need designers. Then they acquired a company that does all this for MBAs. They said, look, these big companies, when they have somebody, when they need to create a presentation or they need to analyze their business, they go out and they hire top business consultants. What if we offered it less expensively? And so now they also do that. And smaller businesses will use them to create. Sorry, what were we going to say?
No, I said that's awesome.
Yeah, it's brilliant. There's smaller businesses that actually have raised a round of funding, but now they need to put together data for the next round of funding. They don't want to do it themselves. They go to them. There are businesses even like mine. I didn't need a full-time CFO, but I need somebody to look at my revenues, look at my profits, and just be the person to just keep nudging me in the right direction and pointing out the mistakes that I'm making. And so I got someone like that from them. Look, we're in a really hot market right now. I feel like this is the opportunity to capitalize. I'm going to say something I don't think TopTel is going to love for me to say, but I think it makes sense. At some point, this whole thing's going to collapse and you're going to start to see massive layoffs for people. Think about it. And everyone at that point is going to say, I should have grabbed more while the grabbing was good and built up my business faster while it was good. And then the second thing they're going to say is, I hate letting people go because it's really painful. Here's the deal. You go hire someone from TopTel. First of all, you can get started with them super fast, phenomenal developers, build your business fast while there's an opportunity to actually capitalize it. And then if the economy tanks, which at some point, let's be honest, it's going to, you don't have a bunch of people that now you've got to go lay off. This is all TopTel talent. You go back to them and you say, guys, we got a problem. And by we, I mean, thank you. You got a problem. This is what a flexible workforce gives you. Flexibility to hire fast, flexibility to let go fast when it doesn't make sense. That flexibility is what makes this, I was going to say this country great, but this world great. But that's an exaggeration. Let's be honest. You don't care about this world or country in the context of this ad. You care about your new hiring needs. Don't delay. Don't wait until the whole thing's over and regret it. Jump on the opportunity right now. And when you do, don't be like everyone else who just goes to toptal.com. That's just for the rest of the world. That's for the hoi polloi. I'm very proud that I understand what that word means. For you, you get an opportunity to get 80 hours of TopTel developer credit when you pay for your first 80 hours. And that's in addition to a no-risk trial period of up to, you know it, I've read so many times. Here's what I don't say very clearly. Top is on top of your head, TAL is in talent, TOPTAL.com/Mixergy. Go sign up. Really, I love them. You're going to love them too. TopTAL.com/Mixergy. It's the kind of company I could see you hiring from.
That was smooth.
Yeah. Thank you. I'm kind of watching myself with them. I did, I think Regis is no longer going to be a sponsor of mine because I said, look, I get my own space. Unlike these other co-working places, I get my own space, I have my own four walls. I could have sex with my wife here if I wanted to. No one's going to know. It's not like in, you know, and they asked for an edited copy of every ad that I ever did. but so I realized there's some sponsors like Regis I need to be a little more formal. TopTel too, I got to be more formal with.
Yeah.
And then there are others who just get do whatever you want.
Yeah. Those are fun.
I got to watch it with them. Okay. Let's continue. Jason Lemkin emails you and he says what?
Yeah. Subject line was something like, want to do an event. And then body was need help. And that's like his type of messaging. So I wrote back and I was like, sure, I'll help you promote it. Let me know what to do. And he was like, no, I need logistical help. Like, do you want to team up on it? So I was like, yeah, sure. Let me like think about what it would be worth. Because, you know, at the time I was building Sales Hacker and I had owned 100% of the company. So I was like, if I'm going to spend time on something else, like it's really got to be worth it for me. Otherwise, I'm just taking away time that I'm spending on, you know, the thing that I'm building. So I said, yeah, I would do it for a 50-50 profit share. And a guaranteed, basically like a guaranteed sum if we didn't make money on the event. But I knew we were going to make money on the event. I knew that like at the time his brand was so strong and logistics were great. So he was like, yeah, sure. I just don't want to lose money. That's all he said. I just don't want to lose money.
Let me pause for a second. The logistics of conferences are a pain in the ass. Why are they so easy to you? What is it about the conference logistics that you thought was nothing? Look, you're even blowing it off as I'm talking, but to me, it's a little scary. What is it?
Conferences under 1,000 people, like it's not union, it's cookie cutter. Like you don't have to do, there's not too much to it.
What do? You get a location.
You get a location. And I mean, at that point we had done a couple of these already. So like we knew how to whip this thing together. You get a location, but you also get a team. Like you go hire a team that just does pretty much all the work. For you, it's
setting really it up. You get the design of the banners and all that. They set that whole thing up for you.
Yeah, exactly. And so like, you know, we have to promote it. We have to get sponsors. We have to get speakers. But, you know, working with Jason, I knew it would be easy because he could get speakers in his sleep. Like, we had too many speakers. For sponsors, I knew it would be like a good event, you know, SaaS event. He had a great network. Again, like, sponsors wasn't too hard, but we were really good at selling sponsors. Like, this is what I'm good at.
But who do you get for Saster? So, you know what? For people who don't know, Saster is a conference for creators of software as a service businesses, right?
Yeah.
That's who he draws in. What are the sponsors that need to reach the creators of software as a service? I can imagine Stripe maybe and a couple of API businesses, but who do they have?
Yeah, everybody. I mean, it's just another niche. It's just another category like HR or insurance software companies. So anybody would want to sell to them. We would at Outreach try to think like what the best sponsors were. It was like Sage Intacct. So they were like, I think it's like financial software.
Okay.
Who else was another? Like any recruiters. So Bet Recruiting was another one. Like Trinet. So benefits, Zenefits, all those types of companies.
Because the people who are running software businesses, they still need to hire because it's a hot market and they need to pay their people. Got it. Okay.
Gainsight was another big sponsor.
Look at who he gets. He got Jeff Lawson from Twilio to be on there as one of the speakers.
Our first year, so like this no-name conference out of nowhere, we had Stuart Butterfield from Slack. They just raised like their first big round of funding. So he was like the it guy. We had David Sachs and Parker Conrad from Zenefits. Same thing. He had just come on, signed on, and they had raised their big round of funding. So they were like the hot tandem. And we had Aaron Levy. And I think...
Box.
It was right before they IPO'd, like a couple months before. I actually think I remember us getting an email like, hey, we're about to enter a quiet period. Like, not sure how much I can say on stage. So he spoke anyway, but I'm pretty sure they were in that quiet period at that time. And then... And then we had, you know, a bunch of other amazing speakers, but those were like the top.
Why does he have such great reach? Is it Saster, the blog? What is it that got him such a great reach at the time?
His authenticity is huge. I mean, he just writes like he thinks. There's no holding back. It's just, you know, here's his opinion. Here's what he does. Here's what he thinks. And he's just going to put it out there. It helps a lot of people. I think he's super well networked just because he's been in tech for so long. You know, he's been in tech for probably 20, 25 years and he was successful in tech. So, you know, he's networked through VCs. He's networked through other successful entrepreneurs in his class. And that's what I'm seeing now. It's like the people you come up with, like when you see these people, you know, like TaskUs, like the two founders of TaskUs are really good friends of mine. They just sold half their company for $250 million. I'm like, now they're on a whole nother level, but like, this is our class. These are the people who are moving to Austin. I know a lot of people who I came up with who started companies around the same time.
All these people who are sitting in a conference room, like a dozen or two dozen at a time, talking about these ideas for what's going to work out, they ended up working out. And now you know them because you were in the room with them when they were trying to figure out how to get customers. I got it. Why does Jason Lemkin give you half the revenue from this business? I was surprised. I thought he just hired you as a...
He wanted to do a conference and he just wanted somebody to take it on the whole thing. He just wanted to promote it and do speakers and have fun with it. And he's not doing it for revenue. He just sold his company for, I think they sold it for like $80 million or something like that.
And so the upside for him is what?
To build the brand,
get more people to come to Saster, and then for him to then invest in the SaaS companies that respect him because they met him at the conference, respect him because they read his blog post. That's the thing.
Build the biggest brand in SaaS. I mean,
you don't think he could just do that offline? I mean, online? Why does the offline part help?
I think if you want to build the biggest movement and you want to be the person behind SaaS, you know, you need to build this like big empire almost. I also think that like when you have enough money, you do things that aren't monetary. You do, you know, like some things are maybe done for like ego or just because you want to. Like what does it matter at that point? Like let's just go big, right? $90 million SaaS fund, largest SaaS conference in the world, and the most traffic SaaS blog.
He's pretty really awesome. Good at just growing things. He's not this like laid back person. The thing that always stood out for me with him where I realized it was value in what he was saying, and it wasn't just interesting, is when he does Saster, people will come to town. They know that Mixergy does Scotch Night or Dinner in My House or whatever. They'll message me, and I realize that the Saster people are some of the smartest people that come for Scotch Night. Super bright. He drags a certain kind of person to him. He draws a certain kind of person, not drags. Okay, so you get people to show up to this conference. The conference does well. How much money do you make from the first conference?
Yeah, so that was our most profitable conference we had done to date, which ends up helping fund Sales Hacker. So this is his business. I don't own any of that business, so I can't get too deep into the numbers there.
Are you talking over $1 million you made in the first one?
No, not on the first
one. Okay. No. All right. But it's profitable and it's enough. I get that we're not going to drag him into this. My sense is that he would have no problem talking about it, but I also understand why you wouldn't, want to take that onto yourself. All right. I'm really good at pushing because I know where I shouldn't push and I know where I should. And I can see here that it's not really worth it. But this is opening your eyes to what's possible. You then start to get into the conference space heavy. What's your biggest event that you did without SASTR?
Yeah. So at that point, once we did the first SASTR, I was like, wow. Let's see the timeline here. So that was 2015.
Was the Sales Hacker Conference was the next one?
Sales Stack was our biggest conference to date. So we did one big tech sales tech conference.
Oh, okay. Sales Stack, that one does 7.5 million in revenue. Total year was 7.5. Fair?
The best year was the second year of the SASTR annual. So yeah.
Okay.
Exactly.
So that's when you're doing your event and his event. Why'd you call it Sales Stack?
So it's your sales tech stack. So it was like a sales technology conference. Like
all the tech that you need in order to sell, this is for people who understand that they need a stack to sell. This is going to draw them in. You got attendees. How'd you get 1,000 people to show up?
Yeah. So we had done a couple of our Sales Hacker conferences. The blog had been running. We had had a list building. You know, we had probably at that point, over 10,000 subscribers, not huge, but substantial to like get people to come. And we had a brand. And people were writing for us. It was crowdsourced content. So it was practitioners helping practitioners. And we just said, okay, there's not a lot of colleges that have sales education, sales programs. Even if they did, even if they had textbooks, they'd be dated by the time they were printed. So, there are people that are out there building companies right now doing cool stuff at those companies that they should share with other practitioners. So Sales Hacker became that destination, that go-to resource for all people in B2B sales, looking to learn from other practitioners.
I feel like I skipped something. I'm sorry, I'm interrupting because I don't know how much time I have with you. How much more time do you have? Can we go over?
Yeah.
We're going to go over time. Good. Sorry, you were going to say something or should I just continue? Okay. I'll just continue with my interruption. You were growing it. You know what? Here's one thing that stands out for me. You have 40 different sponsors at this event. What can you give 40 different sponsors that allow them to stand out an event like this?
Yeah, I didn't know. I didn't know at the time. It was brand new for me. And I was selling ahead of what I was promising in that case too. I was like, yeah, I think we'll get 1,000.
Okay.
Yeah, I was just like, all right, this is.
And you're just trying to riff and see what. But my guess is also you were looking at other conferences. What are they offering when they have 40 sponsors? What do the other sponsors get? Looking at price lists for other people. Is this you, by the way, when you're doing this, Max, going into other conferences and pulling in what they're charging, or do you at this point task someone else and say, go to these top 10 things, tell me what they're offering, we're going
to
create an offer?
Yeah, I don't even need to go anywhere. I can get a company in the space that I'm friends with to send me the prospectus for other conferences so I can see, what they're charging, what I should charge.
And it's you doing it and you going through every one of them?
Yeah, exactly. Okay. I mean, it's not a lot of work. It's just, it's research, it's R&D for me. It's, making sure that we're on par. And yeah, if you have 40 sponsors at an event, you have 1,000 people there, then your, attendee sponsor ratio is, what is it, 25? I mean, it's okay. It's still good. It's a proper trade show now. It's a sales technology trade show versus, just a conference. It's actually now sponsorship revenue is like 75% of your revenue versus, ticket sales from before. So that's when like the balance completely shifts. Like SASTR 1 was still more like ticket sales than sponsorships, but SASTR 2 was like former like trade show.
Why is it better to have sponsors pay more, to earn more from sponsors and attendees?
Because they can pay way more. I mean, you're talking about, should I get $1,000 a ticket or should I get $50,000 from a sponsor? Like, it's easier just to sell big sponsors.
The part that I realized that I was interrupting you earlier about was you at some point were struggling and you went to Jason and you asked him for advice. What do I do with this conference space? What was the feedback that he gave you and why did that make sense?
So that was a little bit later. So we had stopped doing SASTR at this point. So we did the first two SASTR annuals. And Sales Hacker was moving and we were doing these conferences, but we felt that the conference business was getting super saturated. And all these other sales tech SaaS companies were starting to raise decent rounds of funding, which meant that they can now afford their own conferences. So now there's more and more sales technology conferences coming out. And when a SaaS company does a conference, it's a loss leader. They could lose $1 million on it, but they can make, you know, $3 million in software sales. So they don't care. So they can have sushi for lunch, and they can have Magic Johnson do the keynote, and they can have, you know, Taylor Swift do the after party. Probably not, but like Nelly do the after party. Right. So it's like, yeah, big step down.
You know, I want to understand why. So I invested in a company called ManyChat. They do marketing automation via Facebook Messenger. They did a conference. 1,000 people showed up. The founder is still in the building mode. Why does he need to create a conference where 1,000 people show up? What's the goal for him with that? What's the goal for people like him? Why are software marketing software companies doing it?
We're in the same boat here right now. I mean, you want to, for most of these companies, it's about creating a category, and it's about creating a movement around your company. It's about, you know, people feeling included in a tribe, in a club when they use your software. And if it's done right, it works really, really well. I mean, something that we're doing right now around creating this brand around outreach, where like, yeah, if you're going to use a product in this space, like you're going to use us because you're a smart, savvy VP, right? You know what you're doing. So you're going to use outreach. You're not going to use anything else. Or, you know, you just want to be included in the fun. So you know that like, if you use outreach, you're going to be included in the best events and the best dinners and all that kind of stuff. Versus like, you know, if you're not, well, you're just not going to get invited, you know, or you're not going to be able to attend because you're using, you know, a competitor's product. And there's a lot to that. Like, we have our conference at Paradise Point in San Diego, you know, for 3 days, and our competitor has it at Cobb Galleria in a mall in Atlanta. So, you know, it's like, all right, well, if you're a customer and, you know, you're going to come to a customer conference, would you rather go to San Diego, sunny San Diego in March on a beach, or to like a mall and, you know, a weird part of
Atlanta? But why? Wouldn't I just rather use whatever software is best, and then I'll go take my trip anytime I want, anywhere I want?
You can use whatever software is best, but in most cases, in the evaluation process, you should use whatever software is best. But in a lot of cases, there's not that much difference, you know, and in many of these companies, a lot of them are commoditized, or they're very similar, or, you know, you're at the end of the evaluation, you can go one way or the other. This can put it over the edge, or it's something that can get you a lot further in the evaluation. Like, sometimes a company won't even get to that stage of the evaluation because they're like, oh, you know, I just don't want to work with those people. I don't like those people. I don't like the relationship that they're building. All those types of things. It's one big relationship building thing. And it also puts you on the map. It establishes you as an actual company. It develops, you know, a further relationship with customers and you know, pipeline influence and things like that. So, I think it's worth it. And, you know, we've seen, I think, you know, historically that it's been worth it for companies. But, for us, we were like, shit, our window's closing to make money off conferences we couldn't charge as much for tickets. We couldn't charge as much for sponsorships. There were so many other conferences now where, you know, that we were bumping up on other conferences. Venues were getting more expensive because they could. People wanted, the demand was high. And, you know, the bull market, we're doing really well. Companies are raising more money than they need. So they're spending more money and growing, you know, in hyper growth. So anyway, knew we needed to get out of conferences. Like, knew that the business would be dead if we stayed in conferences as our main revenue driver. So had a random, you know, lunch meeting with Jason and was telling him the situation. He's like, just grow. And, you know, he's kind of like a crazy genius, but he's always very short like that.
Why does just growing help? Because if the conference space doesn't make sense because there are too many competitors in it and every software company can outdo you with sushi and everything else, having more people is not going to undo that.
Yeah. So it wasn't just grow your conferences. It was just grow your database, just grow your subscriber base, just grow your views. Cause it's true. It's like, if you had a bigger audience, opportunities will open up. I mean, like right now, if you had a bigger audience, you could charge more for the ads and the sponsorships. Like that's
it. So growth solves everything.
Yeah, exactly. Right.
Okay.
Yeah. Targeted eyeballs solve. Solves a lot.
So then you get that. Sorry, you go ahead. This is what I got to tell you. You're one of my best freaking most exciting guests. I can't stop interrupting because I can't sit still as you're talking. I don't usually chew my pen as I talk, but I can't sit still. So this is me like putting something in my mouth just so I shut up. But go ahead. Sorry.
So, you know, we got to a point where we're like, all right, we got to get it. Like, I felt the walls closing in on me. I mean, there were a couple days where I'd go home from you know, go home to my apartment. I'd lay on the floor and stare at the ceiling and be like, what the fuck am I going to do? Uh-huh. And, you know, then the dog would walk over and lick my face and be like, okay, life's good. But, you know, just get up and figure it out. So we were growing and we said, all right, what are some things we can do now that we have like a large enough database that people will pay for? So we started doing webinars. And I remember we charged like $5,000 for our first webinar. We got like 250 people on it because we had a 20,000 person list or 30,000 person list at the time. We were able to get more people on our webinar than like most of these SaaS companies could get by themselves. So they were willing to pay for it. It was a lead gen program for them.
What was the software vendor that you do in a lead gen webinar for them? Which one?
There were a ton back. I was like,
do you remember the first one that you did it with?
Either Lead Genius or Betts Recruiting or what would be one of the first companies we worked with.
So if it's Lead Genius, they have a service where I can go and get leads, right? Custom B2B contact and account data. They're teaching people about what in this webinar? Is it specifically selling Lead Genius or was there a bigger topic or did
it practices around whatever their category is? So it's all educational content. So they would be a thought leader. They would lead the conversation. So usually typically the sponsored conversations or sponsored thought leadership pieces, whether it's blog posts or webinars or you know, whatever else on Sales Hacker is, we retain full editorial control and it has to be fully educational. So you need to be able to, like a viewer or listener, whatever reader needs to be able to walk away with actionable advice or material without having to spend a dollar. But if they happen to have some budget and want to make it 10,000 times easier, they can buy your product.
And that happens, and you let them sell at the end of the webinar.
Yeah. So for outreach, for example, like we might do a webinar on sales engagement and teach you the best practices on omnichannel outreach. So how to, you know, do a proper sequence where you call, then leave a voicemail, then send an email that alludes to that voicemail, then you connect on LinkedIn, and then you leave a LinkedIn message, and then you, you know, tweet at them, and then you do this, that, and the other thing, and that happens over 21 days, and there's like a whole rhythm to it.
Yep.
We might do a webinar on that, and you can get a ton of valuable, you know, actionable items out of that. Maybe you'll track it with a spreadsheet, use email, and, you know, dial on your phone.
Yep.
You can do it. You don't need to buy any software.
But, and you will teach people how to do it on a spreadsheet.
Exactly.
Okay.
We'll walk you through the process, and if you want to take it to a spreadsheet, you can.
Got it. Okay.
But if you have some budget, you can buy outreach and, you know, it'll blow up for you anyway. Yep, so yep, it'll make it a lot easier.
And then is there like a deal? Usually if you buy it now, we'll even give you a better deal because it's part of this webinar. Not necessarily.
Want to. I mean, and we don't say it on the webinar. It's like, buy it now and get this. And it's like, it's literally, thanks Lead Genius. That was a great episode. You know, look forward to seeing everybody on the next one. And then they get the list from the webinar so they can follow up. We also use GoToWebinar for most of them. Now we use Zoom, but I think they have similar functionality where you can like see the history of the chat. So we ask, you know, we answer audience questions at the end. So sometimes people have questions around the product that they can, you know, take offline. So it's like, it's engaging. So we did one webinar, $5,000. We were doing one webinar a week. Then the, you know, our audience kept growing. We ended up doing $10,000 for a webinar. It was 2 a week for $5,000. Then we switched to $10,000 2 a week. And then we started launching eBooks and other things that people could pay for. So companies were using us almost like an outsourced CMO to not only help them get in front of an audience of B2B salespeople, but also give them a little bit of credibility by attaching their brand to ours. We had an amazing bird's eye view on the entire sales technology landscape and understanding of how salespeople like to buy. So they used us a lot of times for like messaging help. You know, I remember like, a couple times we were working like, what should our webinar topic be? You know, it's like, you're the VP of marketing. And then we end up going into this thing and now like it becomes their messaging for their company. And it's like, oh man, I should have charged them like a CMO fee or something like that, advisory fee. But that actually ended up opening up a whole other thing where I started advising companies. I'm an investor and advisor about 55 different private companies now through like this kind of wormhole. So
have you gotten anything, any like positive upside from that yet? Financial?
I will. There are a couple that are
not yet.
So outreach was actually my first investment.
Angel. Really?
And their last round was at a 515.
Wow.
Valuation. But I'm an
advisor. You were in the angel round.
Angel. Yeah, exactly. Okay. And I'm an advisor in Drift, which will be another big one.
Drift is phenomenal. Yes. Yeah. Why do you think, by the way, Drift? I keep thinking about Drift. Why is Drift succeeding in a world with Intercom? Drift is the same kind of proactive chat in a world where intercom is on everyone's site.
Same thing I said about a tribe and a movement, man. They are angling to be the cool kid brand, the company that you just want to buy. Like if all things were the same, well, let's just go with the one that we would want to go to a dinner with.
Right? And essentially, it is the same. The one thing that they have that is ahead is they've got the love of sales more than the love of customer service. Where Intercom is very lovey-dovey. People need to ask their questions. You need to answer. Drift is, you're a smart salesperson. You know that you need software to help you sell better. We're going to do it. That's the thing that we're talking about.
Drift is actually angling for sales and marketing chat, and Intercom is more support chat.
Right.
There is a little bit of a differentiator in terms of their market message.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So you then start to figure this stuff out. You're creating eBooks. You told me before we started, every webinar not only is getting new people to the webinar, but is bringing new people into your world because people are sharing it, inviting other people to show up. You're starting to understand this space. It's starting to grow for you. Wow. How high did you get in revenue before you sold?
The highest we had was that 7.5 million year that was Saster and Sales Hacker combined. Then when we had just Sales Hacker, I think we were at 3.5 million was our highest revenue number digital.
3.5 digital. And that's all advertising?
So we don't call it advertising, like sponsorships.
Sponsorships.
Yeah.
All sponsorships. I thought I went to your site, and I guess the way you guys presented it didn't feel like it was sponsored anything.
Yeah, you see if you go to webinars, you'll see the little logo in the corner. Yeah.
Why did you sell? You're doing great. You finally figured it out.
Yeah. So I actually wrote a blog post on this on LinkedIn, going into all the details.
How did people not find that freaking thing? Okay.
Yeah. So it's actually pretty interesting. So we were a highly profitable year over year cash flow business, and that's all well and good. But the valuation of a company like this is it's not going to scale the same. I couldn't find a way to 4x it. Couldn't find a way. I couldn't see that. And I was like, all right, well, if 4x from where I was at, not 4x the number, but 4x from what the valuation was right before I sold. And so I was like, well, if I can't scale it like that, is there somewhere I can go where I can? At the same time, you're kind of wondering when's this recession going to happen? And if it does, does it wipe out my entire business? And so what I essentially did was, I sold for cash and stock, and way more stock than cash, 80% stock. Because I wanted to be able to 4 or 5x where my valuation was at the time and go big, and at the same time lower my risk in a market correction. Now I'm at an established company with enough money in the bank to weather a storm versus it potentially wiping out my entire business previously. The other trade-off was, do I go, I had a really nice lifestyle. I was doing summers in the Hamptons. I bought a house in Southampton. I was doing summers in the Hamptons, winters in Miami. And I was like, do I want to switch that? And what I realized was I was bored. I really liked this stuff. And I was manufacturing hobbies and things. I remember I was making my own like tanks to wear in Miami and the Hamptons.
Tank tops.
Yeah, tank.
Oh, stuff. Really?
I couldn't find any good ones. And I still I called it Pineapple Dog, made a little logo for it. It's really cool. I started a healthy coffee alternative with my girlfriend called Sutra. Sipsutra.com is the site, but it's turmeric chai lattes and activated charcoal, hot cocoa. It's really healthy beverages. I've been caffeine free for 6.5 years. So needed something robust and hearty that wasn't a tea.
Wait, I'm breaking myself of my coffee addiction. I basically have, but I need something to drink. Yes, you're saying you've got something that tastes like coffee, but doesn't have the caffeine?
It doesn't taste like coffee. It's a hearty decaf.
That's what I'm looking for. I want something that tastes like it's going to punch me in the face. Not sweet. That's what you're talking about.
So this isn't sweet. So this is a spicy chai. Okay. It's not really sweet.
What about Sutra Black? Should I be getting that?
That's like a hot cocoa. Yeah.
That's a hot cocoa. All right.
Yeah.
But is it actually cocoa?
Yeah, it's cacao.
It is.
Yeah. Cacao and activated charcoal, a couple of things. Yeah.
Activated charcoal? $60?
Well, for I think it's like 30. That's like a big box or something like that.
I got to get this. Okay, go ahead. Yeah. I'm buying this freaking thing.
I think it's like $20 for 10 pack or something like that. But anyway,
you know what? I'm not buying Jack. I'm sending a note to my assistant.
There you go.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. So I was like, you know, we're coming up with hobbies, and that's like a separate story. Like Sutro, we went from idea to shipping product in 3 months. I have a post on the Hustle about that. But yeah, just, you know, why'd I sell? I'm challenged here. We're building a big company. We're doubling revenue year over year. This is a company that's going to IPO or potentially be a fairly large acquisition, like over $2 billion. And I saw a really logical way to say, okay, my upside is so much bigger. My risk is reduced in a big way. And the hit is really just like the, you know, the short-term lifestyle that I was living and the short-term cash flow year in, year out, which is fine. You know, I got cash up front also. So my lifestyle is just fine. Not a lot has changed in terms of...
Except for Seattle. Now you're living in Seattle instead of where...
Yeah, but, you know, I just came back from 33 days on the road in 12 different cities. So like...
Doing what?
What?
Doing what?
Actually was on like a little tour just... shaking hands with all my Sales Hacker supporters, saying thank you, and also, hey, reminding them that we're at Outreach now, so let me know how I can be helpful.
And so Outreach is paying you to go do this travel. Yeah. You go with your girlfriend?
No.
Just go on your own?
She came. We had two weddings in New Orleans and New York, so she came for those.
Wow, dude.
Yeah. Yeah, I was out bouncing around, and you know, we're Salt Lake City, Denver. We have for Sales Hacker, we have people everywhere, and for Outreach too, so now we're kind of like merging those two audiences, and you know, it's nice to build the community that way. We don't need to spend a lot of money on demand gen, or like, you know, fancy dinners, because people want to be associated with Sales Hacker and be part of this community. So
I'd love for you, if you're in San Francisco, come to my house for dinner. I want to invite a few people. I want to have you talk about some of the stuff that you said I won't talk about publicly. I think that's phenomenal.
The category creation stuff we're doing is really cool. There's some stuff.
What do you mean?
Hacker and Outreach stuff that we can talk about at dinner.
Okay. Do you think I should be doing webinars too, where I bring somebody in and say, you teach about your software and do a webinar about it and charge them for that? Should Mixergy be in the webinar business?
Yeah, I think people would pay. I mean, you have to figure out what your segments are though. So it's the same type of people who would pay for a podcast for a webinar. So like if that's working for you, if that flow is working for you, then you don't really need to change it. If you had a niche audience, I'd say the webinars are really efficient. So for us, for example, you know, we had B2B salespeople. So
that's a really good audience.
Pay us to get in front of salespeople. If we had B2B marketers, same thing. Like marketing software companies would pay us to get in front of.
We have entrepreneurs and they don't have huge budgets and they're buying one at a time.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? That's the difference.
Ads are perfect for that.
Yeah. All right. Podcast ads, and what I'm going to do an ad for in a second. But first, I'm going to close this out by saying, Max, thank you so much. Where's a good place for people to go and see you now? Personal blog? Should they go to Sales Hacker?
Follow me on LinkedIn. That's where most of my stuff is. Instagram, I'm also on as Hack at Max. And then saleshacker.com for all things B2B sales. We're still posting fairly regularly, have an amazing podcast there, webinars, everything completely unbiased. I know we're owned by Outreach now, but we still put our competitors in the blogs alongside us and do everything else that, you know, you'd expect the unbiased community to do. Still number one goal is to grow it and never do anything that would negatively affect the reader, listener, or viewer experience. And then outreach.io, so a leading sales engagement platform. If you are selling by email or phone, you should check us out for sure.
Who's taking pictures of you when you're shirtless in your Instagram?
Oh, that's my girlfriend.
That's like, your girlfriend.
Insta whiz. Amazing. Yeah.
Yeah. I like the shots of you just kind of hanging out. I was wondering what the hell is a guy who's into like sales software going to be posting up there?
Oh, it's good. I've been to 80 countries. We've traveled a lot, in the past few years while I was running Sales Hacker. So like there are some pretty good picks of, you know, I work from anywhere. We were a completely remote company. So if I'm in Japan at Mount Fuji at a Ryokan, I got my laptop out sitting in a bathtub, like staring at the mountain. And that's a good.
Plus you got good style. You're here with just like a hoodie. This is partially why I thought it's just like a regular dude. And then you blew my mind with what you said on your Instagram account. Even your t-shirts look like they cost $1,000. What the hell? What is it? Some of them, like the one where you're holding up a crab, that looks like you're casual, but it feels like you went to Barney's before you went to get casual.
Yeah, probably.
That's good. That's got to be
back in the personal shopper days.
You got 281 likes on that thing.
Hell yeah.
All right. I want to thank my two sponsors. Number one, toptal.com/mixergy when you're hiring, really. How many entrepreneurs are now coming in here? One of the things that we're talking about over Scotch is, will the economy explode? Everyone's preparing for that quietly and hoping it never comes. toptal.com/mixergy. Build while you can and be prepared for just in case things fall apart. Number two, save money on hosting by getting a good hosting company that you're going to be proud to be a part of. Go to hostgator.com/mixergy. And finally, Max, here's our big revenue generator. I listen to my interviewees and I look for some who have ideas that our audience need to learn from. Here's one guy who I interviewed recently. His name is Scott Bintz. He got really burned out when his company was doing about $3-5 million. It's all the same when you're at that level and you don't love life. He said, I got to find a way to love life. He took a tour of the companies that he admired, understood how they build culture. He brought back the best ideas to his business and he was selling truck parts online. And suddenly he loved working in his company. And yeah, the money was starting to grow too. And before long, he had $100 million in sales because he couldn't build it to 100 on his own, but his team could once they got passionate about it and they got going, got it to $100 million in sales and he sold it. Now he's on a mission to talk about how to build culture. He wrote this book. And I said, hey, Scott, do you want to just do a course on Mixergy? I hired someone to turn his ideas into a course. He did it. It's available to anyone who's listening to us at mixergy.com/premium. We charge you guys to go listen to it. Mixergy.com/premium, because this is the kind of thing that will actually change the way that you do your business. Even if you take one idea from him, I'm telling you, and there's one that we're using, phenomenal success. What do you think of that as a model, Max?
That's awesome. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Here's the one problem that we have. I should be saying go to mixergy.com/Scott or something like that. Go take you directly to it. Number one, you probably have five other ideas, but
you don't have a short link for that. Something like that. Yeah. SEO would be big. See, like, you know,
on the course material, we need to have somebody write.
Yeah. Some really good SEO landing pages for anybody who's looking for, like, you know, I think that was the topic was what, culture or what was it?
Culture.
Yeah.
How to create a culture that grows sales.
So that should be like, somebody types in like company culture, you should be the first thing that pops up, right? Like that's the SEO game.
All right. That is our next goal here. First, I want to keep building these courses properly, but no, it has to be hand in hand, right? That's what you would tell me. Hand in hand, Andrew. Max, thanks so much for being on here.
Oh man. Thanks for having me.
Thanks. Bye everyone.